Hello, Barely Legal Comedy Podcast listeners. That is the fourth take of doing that because I couldn't remember the name of my own podcast. So anyway, I'm Chris Keogh. Yeah, there's no Alex Baldwin. There was normally Baldwin would do this bit, wouldn't he? He'd introduce us and then me, and then we'd get on with talking about whatever it was, whatever puerile nonsense it is we talk about before we talk about the law. But he's not here. He's off on a boat somewhere telling jokes to the elderly. So, yeah, so it's just me this week. We were going to wait till he got back, but he's away too long. So I'm going to just do like a little stopgap episode while we await his imminent return from wherever he is, the Arctic Circle or maybe the coast of Africa or somewhere like that. It's very exotic and it sounds very cool. So we'll have lots of things to talk about when he's back. But as it is, he's away at the moment, so it's just me. So I was wondering what to talk about. I've done episodes on my own before. They're always a bit weird because I don't have anyone to sort of bounce off. I sort of rely on Alex to sort of, you know, to give me things to talk about. But I'm just on my own, sort of talking. I'm in my office now, talking on my own. It's a bit weird. But I thought I'd just give you a little insight into some of the things I've been getting up to in my day-to-day life, in my professional roles. So I was going to talk about, I could talk about the law maybe, I was going to talk about maybe diminished responsibility, I thought, and how that applies to those who kill but lack the capacity to form the relevant intention to murder. But then I decided I couldn't bother doing that. I do that sort of, you know, all the time, it seems. And I thought I'd just talk about something that I did last week or a couple of weeks ago, in that one thing that I have to do in my role at the university is that I'm always on the lookout for opportunities for the students to have things to put on their CV, you know, like to meet, you know, to attend at conferences and meet with members of the profession and things like that. And so basically, if I get invited to speak at conferences, which I do occasionally, believe it or not, I try and sort of wangle some free tickets for the students, and usually I'm successful in being able to do that. So yeah, it's good. So a few weeks ago, about 2 weeks ago now, maybe 3 weeks even, we went to the Women in Law, the Women in the Law conference in Manchester. Women in the Law is a sort of charitable organisation that promotes representation for women in the legal professions. It's run by Dr. Sally Penny, MBE, to give her full title, and it's a really good organisation which, you know, put on lots of good events and basically allows sort of female practitioners and prospective practitioners in the legal professions to come together and sort of celebrate each other's successes, and as well as talk about issues that you know, that are relevant to women in the professions. So it's a good organisation and they put on some really cool things, but you know, they invited me along. You know, I thought, am I ticking diversity boxes here? It's not often that I get to do that as a white heterosexual male, but it's you know, a key part of the process is allyship, and so I was there with a sprinkling of other men from the sort of like profession up here in the Northwest to support the event, and also, you know, have something to say in relation to our roles as allies. So yeah, it was really interesting. What was cool about it is that it was on a theme, and the theme was imposter syndrome. Now, you might have noticed actually when I was you know, I have a tendency to do this, which is to sort of downplay my own expertise and achievements, I guess is the right word for it. In so much that, you know, while I was introducing this there before, I was, you know, I said, you know, I get invited to speak at conferences and then added a little qualification for some reason, you know, and it's, you know, and I do that quite a lot. Now, I don't know whether that is actually imposter syndrome. I don't know whether it goes as far as to call it a syndrome. Is questioning whether or not what you have a syndrome, you know, is that also a type of thing? You know, am I saying, you know, what I have isn't worthy of being considered to be a syndrome? I don't know. And maybe that makes it sort of even worse. But they were talking about imposter syndrome at this event, because it's something that affects women, particularly in professions. It affects people from all walks of life, potentially. But I think that as I've been doing a bit of reading around it, and it basically was is applied to women more often than men. And so imposter syndrome came about. I think it was I'm reading it off, you know, from the internet, right, as we speak. So I know this to be a fact. So 1978, it was introduced by clinical psychologist Pauline Clance and Suzanne Imes, who introduced the term imposter phenomenon rather than imposter syndrome, and defined it as an internal experience of intellectual phoniness. Right, so what that means was they basically had observed 150 very successful, mostly white women in individual psychotherapy groups and college classes, and observed that that despite the fact that these women had academic honours, degrees, high standardised test scores and praise from colleagues, they had not internalised their success. So they you know, they all around them, they had the evidence that they were in any way not phonies, that they were here on merit, wherever it was that they found themselves, you know, that they were intelligent, they had been successful, but they had yet to internalise that success. And then they reported feeling like imposters, that they didn't believe they're intelligent, and they believed that they'd fooled people into thinking that they were smart, and basically, you know, that they didn't belong where they were. You know, that eventually I'm going to get found out, you know, this is all a big scam that I'm pulling over everybody. You know, and that's not, and sooner or later people are going to, there'll be something that happens which will confirm to everyone, including myself, that, you know, I don't deserve to be here, and that actually I will go back to where I belong, which is lower than where I am now. That's, you know, that's the sort of psychology of it, really. So it's interesting because, it's not something that everybody gets, suffers from, but, you know, it is something that I think I've spoken about before. I get this sometimes, both in my day job and my nighttime job. You know, I often don't feel like I've done as well as I could do, and that therefore, and that's my true level. You know, like, it's like when you sort of feel that a particular failure or something is actually, now I've been found out, this is where I am at, really. Everything else that's gone before, all the success, any successes I've had, that was all false. This one sort of like negative interaction, that's the true measure of where I'm at. And that's, you know, that's very much the psychology in a nutshell, really. And you know, I think we all get that to some degree. I've just said before that we don't all get it, but you would hope that most people get it. Because I think in some ways it's fairly natural to question yourself and have some sort of doubt as to your own abilities. And I think if you don't have any doubt as to your own abilities, then that suggests an element of narcissism, and maybe that you don't actually check in on yourself and make sure that you're doing the right thing. So, you know, I would imagine thoughtful people do, you know, in checking that they're doing the right thing, sometimes may well be able to convince themselves that they're not. So I think it's fairly natural. However, it can be, if it gets to the point where it's almost a syndrome, then it can be quite debilitating and stop you from being able to achieve what you want to achieve. And, you know, I often equate it to feeling like, I sometimes feel like I'm a sort of like a child in a room full of adults, if that makes sense. You know, so it's not that I feel like a phony, like I don't deserve to be here, but I sort of belittle myself maybe and feel a little bit like, you know, everyone knows what they're doing. They all know each other. I'm not there. And I sort of put that down to, I think, a little bit from my, God, this is turning into a bloody therapy session on my own now, but a little bit to do with my youth. When I, you know, like when I went to sort of like university, I studied, you know, I went to a comprehensive school. I'm from, you know, what would nowadays be classed, you know, what was certainly a working class background, albeit one in which I was, you know, I had a lot of privileges as well, you know, and that, you know, I had parents who supported me and were able to sort of financially, you know, enable me to go and do what I wanted to do and stuff like that. But I didn't have the sort of social background as that when I found myself at university that lots of my peers and colleagues had. Not all of them, but quite a lot, you know, quite a lot of them went to, you know, fee-paying schools and so on. And I'm not in favour of fee-paying schools. I think we should get rid of them all, to be perfectly frank. Everyone should have the same, should be able to have the same level of education. And I think that sending, you know, the fee-paying schools really do end up sort of creating glass ceilings and glass floors. And I don't blame people that go to them because they didn't really have any choice. But likewise, I would get rid of them. But anyway, that's a little aside. But yeah, everyone had this sort of like social cachet that came from that and certain networks and so on. And, you know, and I very much didn't have that. But, you know, there was nobody with my accent in my friend group, you know, or my peers and colleagues. And so I think I did sort of feel sometimes a little bit, you know, I'd be like rubbing shoulders with people who, You know, like one of my friends at uni lived next door to David Ginola, or David Ginola, as I probably started to call him when I was at uni. And another one and went to school with the Prince of Jordan. I think the person who's now the King of Jordan was one of his classmates, you know. Whereas, like, you know, I went to school with lads who, you know, got done for, like, nicking milk and stuff like that, you know, on the way to school and other lads as well. They went on to do good things. But, you know, the point is that we were from different backgrounds, and it's sort of like, and there is a feeling that you don't quite belong there. Now, it doesn't seem to work the other way around, is what I've noticed. And this is where I have something of an issue maybe with the concept of imposter syndrome, because it seems to sort of like, it makes you internalise the issue. So you'll see lots of things about overcoming imposter syndrome, or about, you know, how you can deal with this and you can deal with that. And you know, and it strikes me that a lot of it actually is that the systems themselves are what need to change. You know, it's not the individual that needs to change to fit in with those systems, but the systems themselves that need to be more inclusive and allow people to feel sort of valued there. You know, a big thing is the sort of value that's added to sort of extroverts and that type of sort of extroverted sort of like behaviour and having to constantly sell yourself. You know, if you look at any guidance, you know, any sort of tips for overcoming imposter syndrome, it's always about sort of celebrating your successes. And, you know, that doesn't come naturally to some people. And I don't think it's not necessarily wrong to not feel like you want to sort of tell everyone how well you've done at things. You might want to tell sort of the people that are closest to you and how you've done well, that it's good. But this idea of constantly having to sell yourself, you know, it's like you go on LinkedIn and it's just full of people telling you all about their successes. And sometimes people telling you about their sort of challenges and so on. But you know, I have noticed on LinkedIn when people are telling you about the challenges and about difficulties that they've had, they're always sort of within the context of a story in which they overcame those difficulties and ultimately succeeded. There's nobody on LinkedIn telling you about the time that they had some difficulties that ultimately beat them. You know, so there is this idea of having to sort of, you know, express this external sort of aura of success and so on. And I think that leads to people to feel like failures. It creates this sort of like cult of perfectionism, you know, where people feel like they have to be sort of perfect all the time, and then anything that falls short of perfect is yet proof that you're not good enough. LinkedIn is like the work version of sort of Instagram and Facebook, isn't it? Basically, you know, it's like someone said, "What about Facebook? We made it about the office," you know. And it's good for some things, but I also think it can lead to this sort of negative, sort of like, you know, toxic positivity, they call it, don't they? I think it's like that. You know, like, you look at people's lives on Instagram and on Facebook, and it seems to be, you know, one of unbridled success and adventure and fun. And that's because that's the part of those that we're choosing to show. And I think that a lot of that feeds into this imposter syndrome thinking in the workplace anyway. But, yeah, so change the systems. But anyway, it's difficult to change the systems though, so maybe there is some merit in actually having a look at how to change yourself. Now, I found myself speaking at this event that was about imposter syndrome, as a man there, not as a woman, the Women in the Law conference, and also as a man who there was a few people on before me, but basically Baroness Hale spoke at this event. You know, the former president of the Supreme Court of the United Kingdom. And I was like following her. So that'd be the equivalent of me having, you know, at a comedy gig, having to follow Billy Connolly. It was quite daunting, really. And so I did what I normally do. I was on a panel, so I wasn't on my own, thankfully. But I just told a few jokes and did that. My sort of like knee-jerk sort of nervous reaction is to try and deflect attention by way of non sequiturs and absurd surrealist ramblings, and I did that pretty successfully. But I also had to reflect on imposter syndrome, and I was asked, what was your biggest feeling of imposter syndrome? And lots of people there had sort of talked about things to do with work, and I know it was a work based thing, but mine was like, I actually sort of felt like when my daughter was born, in that I remember having to drive her home from the hospital, because that's what they like, kids. It's always something you need to do for them. And just getting her in the car, and I was like, oh my God, they—I don't know who they are in the, in this scenario—but they've all confused me for an adult who's responsible and can barely take care of myself, let alone another person. And I ultimately I was wrong though, because like, you know, 13 years on, she's still here and smashing it out of the park, being great at stuff. So you know, I've done all right so far in that regard. But still, if I sort of like mess up in my parenting, you know, if I don't deal with a particular issue really well, that can lead to a bit of introspection, which can, you know, be negative and make you think, well, I'm not very good at this. When actually, it was that you weren't very good at that one particular thing. So use that feeling of negativity to sort of, to improve your performance moving forward. But yeah, so I had to talk about that. And one thing we all talked about as well was what advice would you have for overcoming these feelings if you have them, you know? And like I say, the best thing to do would be to change any sort of system that promotes people feeling like this. But let's, you know, assume the reality is that we can't change that system on our own, and therefore we can adapt to living within that system and making it as comfortable for us as possible. Now, there was one that Lady Hale said, you know, and it was quite interesting to hear her talk about the fact that she had imposter syndrome. She was like, literally, you know, the president of the Supreme Court. You can't get higher than that in the legal profession. You know, like, she's absolutely smashed it all to bits, you know, and to use the sort of comedy parlance. And yet, at every single step of her becoming, of climbing that ladder, she said that she had suffered from, you know, imposter syndrome, you know, self-doubt and feeling like she can't, you know, like that she didn't belong there, and that she, you know, and the, you know, there were reasons for that. She said that, you know, she'd been like made to feel like she didn't belong there as the first woman in that, you know, as a, you know, in that role. But nevertheless, her tip for it, and this was something that I really liked actually, was that, you know, if you find yourself in a position, like you're in a job, for example, you've been given a new job, and you're starting to doubt whether or not you can actually do it, you need to remind yourself that somebody else thought you could. So the person who has hired you, the person who's given you that job, they think that you can do this job. Otherwise, you wouldn't have that job. And that is an endorsement, and it's an externalization of the fact that you are good enough for it. And that therefore, therefore you'll be fine. And then there's sort of like you can, if you take that to its logical conclusion, you can also, you can also get to the point where if it turns out that you weren't good enough for the job and you didn't do very well at it, that wasn't your fault either. As long as you've not lied on your CV and said you can do things that you can't, as long as you've been honest and the person thought that they, you know, that that you could do it, and it turns out you can't do it, then that's their judgment call that's wrong, because it can't be your judgment call, because you didn't know exactly what the job would entail until you started doing it, and therefore that's not your fault either, and you can just put it down to a learning experience and move on to something else. So, I mean, I think that's really good. I thought that was really good advice. I would also expand on that, and say that, yeah, also, if you find yourself in a position where you're doing things that you think, can I actually do this? Is that not only has someone else thought you could do it, that, you know, there are a number of people who think that you can do this, or who know that you can do this. And one of those people is you. You know, like, you backed yourself at one point to do this. And now here you are about to start doing it, or in the middle of doing it. And so really the only option you have is to just do it. You know, that was always been my thing, is that, you know, if I'm going to do something, I'm just going to do it. And then do it as well as I can. And if it turns out that my best isn't right for the job, it's not that it's not good enough, it's just that it's not right. And then that's just the way it is again. And you can learn from that. So, you know, back yourself. But also, you know, remember, I also think that self-doubt isn't inherently bad. It's not a bad thing to check that you're actually the right person for this and that you can do this thing. You know, the country and the world is unfortunately run by so many people that have an inflated sense of their own ability. Look at the majority of people involved in politics or who've risen to the top of it, you know. And what they are people that don't have any imposter syndrome are just more words that they can't spell. That's all they are. That's all that is to them. You know, like never any doubt whatsoever as to their own intellectual abilities, their own ability to do, you know, their own practical abilities. You know, all of that. You know, if basically imposter syndrome had like an antithesis, like there was an anti-imposter syndrome, then that would be Boris Johnson. You know, like someone who has no doubt whatsoever in his abilities to do absolutely everything, despite all the evidence to the contrary. You know, and you don't want to be like that. So you need to sort of like, you know, self-doubt, checking in on yourself isn't inherently bad, because it can make you improve your performance and keep you sane as well and be better for people around you. But in checking in to make sure you're all right, I would just say give yourself a break. You can't be perfect. No one can be perfect. And imperfections actually is what makes us all interesting, I would say. You know, and we all do this. I have this thing where, you know, I'd wake up sometimes in the middle of the night sort of thinking about one sort of relatively minor social faux pas that I made 25 years ago. You know, or, you know, misreading sort of signals and or misreading, you know, sort of like the sort of thread of a conversation or something like that. Or, you know, like when I sort of like forgot to sort of say hello when I bumped into someone, you know, and just really minor trivial things like that. But, you know, and you can do that and, you know, and that can be like this like negative sort of like feedback loop. So give yourself a break though. Everyone makes mistakes. So this is the key point as well that I've learned from this sort of whole process of speaking at this. I felt very much like a bit of an imposter when I had to speak at the same event as Baroness Hale. But I still just did it and it was fine. And the key point is to sort of like tell people. You will probably find that more people than you realize feel like this as well. And so I think in the room that we're in, I've spoken to some of my students who were there as well afterwards, like to hear someone as, you know, as senior and as celebrated as Lady Hale, Baroness Hale, whatever her rank actually is, to sort of say that she also suffers from imposter syndrome. That in itself was quite empowering, I think, for people. So probably, you know, raising some of your concerns isn't a bad thing, because you'll find that other people feel like this and actually it's fine. So that's what I just thought I'd talk about this week. You know, if you feel like an imposter at times, we all do, and all you need to do is just get on with it. And, you know, and also life's short, so enjoy yourself. You can't be perfect. And you know, like I say, I always think as well, this is, you know, maybe this is the comedian in me, is, you know, is that when things go wrong, you think, well, at least this is going to be quite funny, isn't it, probably. When we look back in it, there's that thing of like, we'll be laughing about this in a few years' time. That is genuinely true as well, isn't it? So, you know that, you know, in the context of the, you know, the wider sort of scope of life, for the most part, most things that happen to you will be fine and you can laugh about it in a few years' time. So that would be my advice to you. Hopefully Boardman's back in a week or two's time, and we can have a longer one. Basically, it's talking on my own in my office is not very easy. If you feel like a phony, don't worry, we're all phonies to some degree or another, but we're all, makes us all human and real as well. So just crack on and be you, and keep smashing it out of the park, basically. That was unnecessarily motivational at the end, wasn't it? There we are. I'm feeling in that kind of mood. Right, bye.